Everybody is, I take it, somewhat familiar with Dr. Brad Young, right? You know that he worked with Dr. David Flusser, which has passed away not too long ago, but was a very, very preeminent scholar in the Nazarene Codicil. And so Brad Young worked with him. Brad Young has written several books. This is not the only one he's written. The first one I read of his many years ago was about Yeshua and the Lord's Prayer. So we may cross some of that material in here. In the near future, we'll be talking about the Amida, the standing prayer, and he relates some of the ideas to that. His Eminence has an article on the Amida and the Lord's Prayer. So when we talk about the Amida, we will probably dovetail that material together as well. This book is Dr. Elisheva has worked on making the course material that you have yourself right now. So she's worked very, very earnestly at it. But what we will be doing is the handout material that you got this evening, we will be adding to that material and having reading requirements and pieces out of things that you also get weekly. So there will always be questions from the homework that Dr. Elisheva has given you, which is in the original packet, but each week you will also receive questions for what we did in class and things related to that, things that I've noticed that I want to put emphasis on, and for you to ask questions. Now, let me just give you a quick overview of how I set up the questions. The questions are a little bit different. They will change format next week a little bit, because what I did, if you look at the top where it says Lesson 1, if you will look at on page 7, on paragraphs 3 and 4, where it says, "But Jesus also," in your book, you know, you have to go over there right now. But that's the key to how to find the material that I'm asking the question for here, okay? So we probably will just take that away, and it will be, the material will be in the chapter, somewhere in the chapter, and then, you know, the reason that you'll want to read it more than once is you want to retain the material, right? And then the questions are designed to bring out key thoughts that are in the material. So that's why I'm going to change the format. I just wanted you to get used to this particular format that I have here. Now, the other material that we gave this evening, is, which is a part of your packet, is an overview to prayer, and that comes from the Art Scroll Sephard Siddur. Okay? So if you have an Art Scroll Siddur, all you have to do is go to the overview of prayer in that, and you'll have the same material. So you can look at that. Also, one thing that I will point out, for those that have the Art Scroll Siddur, many times Dr. Brad Young will reference the Mishnah. Okay? The Mishnah, now the Mishnah is not in the Art Scroll Siddur, but he will refer to sections that you will know as Perkei Aviot or Perkei Avot, which is the sayings of the fathers, okay? And that is in the Art Scroll Siddur, and it starts about page 590, I believe. So that material is there in your Art Scroll Siddur if you have that. If you don't have a Mishnah, I would recommend, I think Brother Courtney has one on his computer, which is, it's great to have, and it's an elementary start into looking into rabbinic material. So I would recommend finding one. Now you can find them on Amazon. The one that I recommend will be by Jacob Neusner. And he'll sell it in one solid volume. Now, depending on how much you look for and what kind of deals you find, you'll find it at various cost levels. But it's usually around $60 to $70.
How did you spell that last name?
Neusner. I think is how it's spelled. Neusner.
Yeah,
it,
N-A-U-S-N-E-R.
I think it is. It may have an A in it. I'm not sure. Anyway, you'll look at the Mishnah, and then you'll find Jacob Neusner, and you'll find what we're looking for. Chuck and Val found theirs for a very exorbitant price. They paid through the nose for it, like I think $12 at a yard sale somewhere. What was it? $12.99. Okay. So that just a basic introduction to some of the things that we'll be going through both this evening and through the class. Now, one other thing that I want to point out is this. One thing that is basic about what Dr. Young does is he doesn't differentiate the material that he's citing. Okay? So what we will do is we will try to let you know that the material is what particular level, right? Okay, because right now, the way that we're working things out, we're working basically on a Peshat level, right? So not that we won't deviate in this particular class, because the material is not all Peshat, okay? So those of you who have attended class enough already know that if we're reading from the book of Matthew, which is some of the material that we you should have read this week, we're not reading in Peshat, are we?
No.
We're reading in what? Drosh or Midrash, okay? So we can drive Peshat material from that, but the material is basically allegorical in content. But there will be other material in here that he will refer to, and sometimes it will be, say, Mishnaic, which is Peshat, or it may be Gemara, which is the Mishnah and the Gemara together form the Talmud, and so that material will be Remez, the next level, and then from time to time he'll quote the Midrash Rabbah, which is Midrash, of course, and then I haven't read any place right off the top of my head where he has gone to Zohar, but in the event that he does, we will cover those things there. Okay, she's going to print this, but that shouldn't be a problem. But okay, so now let's go. What I want to do is I want to go to page one, I guess. That's a great place to start, right? Hopefully you've read all the material before, okay? Down at the second paragraph, it said, many Christians are surprised to discover that Yeshua was closely connected to the rabbinic movement in his thought and educational approach. And, you know, one of the things that's very interesting about all of this is that very few Christians, and I don't mean this in any demeaning fashion, but most Christians are not familiar with rabbinic material, okay? So they won't be highly familiar with the Mishnah or the Talmud or the Gemara or any of those things. So so they will find it difficult to even find their place. But once you study a little bit of rabbinic material, if you just a little bit, you start to study the material, all of a sudden you hear the sayings of Yeshua in those materials, and then you'll say, boy, that sounds like something I read in the Nazarene Codicil, or something I read here, or something I read there. So much of the material that we have in the Oral Torah, it overlaps, because this was the teaching of the rabbis during the first century and during the time just after the first century, okay? So it's very important for us to know that the rabbinic material and Yeshua actually correspond. Go to the bottom of the page. The vast sea of Jewish literature teems with commentaries on the Bible and instructions on how to live a life that is pleasing to God within the community of faith. Okay? So now let's stop and let's ask a question. Okay? What is the purpose of the rabbinic material?
To teach us how to apply what is in
Okay, so it's not, number one, just commentary. So if we read and we say, well, the Mishnah is a commentary on, or the Gemara is a commentary on, or the Midrash Rabbah is a commentary on, that's actually a fallacy. It's not a commentary on those pieces. The way the Mishnah works, the Mishnah will pick up a piece of the material, and then it will begin to elaborate primarily on what we call halakha. Okay? Which is what? What is halakha?
How to walk.
Literally, how to walk. How to conduct yourself on a daily basis. But it's interesting here that they wrote all these things, and how did it say that they did it? Why did it say that they did this for? Had instruction on how to live a life that's pleasing to God. So the purpose here is this. So when we look at what Dr. Brad Young has written here, and we look at this and we say, if this is the premise behind what the rabbis wrote, then what should be our approach to the material?
We should be studying it and see how we're supposed to walk.
Okay, then we should be looking at it and saying, how can I appropriate this material? Is there something in this material that I should be reading and appropriating? It's interesting that Paul tells us, Chacham Shaul tells us, that he said, I taught you the traditions, or I taught you these particular traditions and foundations, the traditions. And it's interesting because when he says traditions, he's not only talking about the rabbinic material, he's talking about Mishnah and also Gemara. And so when he teaches us this, he tells us about these things. In other words, you know, the Christian that looks at his Nazarene codicil and he sees that Paul taught the traditions, they should actually want to know what those traditions are, wouldn't they? Wouldn't you think, now listen and answer, wouldn't you think that if he said, I taught you about the traditions, that you'd want to know what he taught? And how many times have we read that he said that he sat at the feet of Gamaliel, the rabbi, he's a Pharisee, etc., etc. And wouldn't you think that that would provoke us into looking into that material and say, what was Paul taught? And he's accredited for having written over 2/3 of the Nazarene Codicil. So if you wanted to look up material for Paul and get a background on the teaching of Paul, where would you go? Well, you wouldn't go to, like, say, the Matthew Henry commentary on the New Testament, or... So, can you... You go to the rabbinic material. And why would you choose the rabbinic material? Okay, that's the foundation of his material. So if you know that Paul is rabbinically trained, then you would want to go into the material that, you know, he was trained with and look, and you could see, you know, because first of all, Paul is not written on Mishnah. Most of his works are written on Gemara, okay, the next level up. Okay, so that they're written on Remez, or the next level, the level Remez, the level beyond Peshat, if they're written on that, that means that they're alluding to something. They're giving a hint. Okay? So if they're giving a hint, when you're reading through the book of Romans, when you're reading through the book of this, or the book of that, Corinthians, or this, or that, when you're reading through these books, if you want to understand what he's talking about, the hint, then where do you have to go to get the material? Where do you have to go to get this hint, to understand what he's hinting about? Okay, very good. Okay, it's actually, you know, we need to know the rabbinic material. So that we can allude to that. We've already basically said that. But actually, you need to go back here. You need to go back to the Mishnah And understand, but now when I say the Mishnah, I'm talking about the Nazarene Mishnah, right? So when I'm talking about the Nazarene Mishnah, what am I talking about? The New Testament Mishnah. What is the New Testament Mishnah?
Would that be Matthew, Mark, Luke?
No. The Mishnah. Right. Yeah. How about Mark, Peter, 1 and 2, and Jude?
Oh, because they're the Peshat.
They're the Peshat for the Nazarene Codicil. So before you ever understand the hint, you go here. But also we know that if Paul is taught by the rabbinic master such as Gamaliel, I have some other thoughts. I believe that first of all, let me say this, okay? When he talks in Gemara or Remez, that level, he's talking in code. Does everybody understand that? So if I said 14 days in code, what could I be talking about?
14 years, you say, the Torah.
I could be talking about 14 years. I could be whatever. Now, the Midrash of Matthew does what? It plays on this number 14 when it opens up, right? Mm-hmm. And to show us very important things out of this. So if we want to understand this Remez or Gemara, then what we have to do is first understand this Peshat, but then we can also look at rabbinic material. But I think that actually the teacher who teaches Paul predominantly is Peter himself, Chacham Safet, okay? And his saying Gamaliel is actually a hint to Peter being his teacher, okay? That's very complex, and I don't intend to explain it right now, but just put that on the back burner, okay? You know what I'm saying? Just leave it back there, and someday we'll work around to getting it. Don't tell anybody that, right? Don't tell them yet. Why not tell them yet?
Because you're not ready to explain it.
Because it's right. It's not explained, and then we're not ready to go into all the details in the next level, Gemara, to bring that material out. So if you did anything and you talked about it, you say, somebody has a thesis that this is the case. Okay? And don't go beyond that. Okay? It's not that I don't want you to give away secrets. It's just that when you're not at that level, you don't discuss that material. You understand?
I don't even know what I'll have to write it down, so I sure couldn't.
There you go. There you go. We sound like we're in the Seder, right? I don't even know what question I'm supposed to ask, right? Okay. Now, let's go to page 7. Now, I just do not like that marker at all. Okay. Probably before you started, attending class, if someone said to you the word Pharisee, what was your impression of the Pharisees?
Bad
a bad person. Any other impressions?
I knew they weren't bad, but years ago I did. I believed that they were.
Years ago you did believe that they were what?
Hypocrite,
yeah. Right? Okay. Matter of fact, if you go in the dictionary and look up the word Pharisee, or look up the word hypocrite maybe, I guess probably it might do both, right? Go both ways. But if you look up Pharisee, it'll tell you they were hypocrites, okay? Now my question to you, is that material accurate?
No.
No, right? Okay. And one of the things that he points out here is that that most people, their concept of the Pharisees is that they're very, very rigid and very, very strict. So now my question to you, is that accurate?
No, not all of them.
Not all of them, okay? So, you know, we've been acquainted and had enough discussion where we talk about the two schools, right? So we know that their one school was stricter than the other school, right? actually, one school followed the intent of the Torah, while the other is trying to just follow it basically to the letter. Okay? Now, it's interesting because that's our perspective for the most part of the Pharisees. Okay? Now, let me ask a question. Now, even without quoting from the book or looking at what the book has to say, what's your perspective of a Pharisee now?
Favorable.
Okay. In what way? How do you now say that they're favorable? What's your...
Once I understood the reality of the Pharisees and rabbinic thought, I began to understand that they were it was a necessity. If I was going to go any further, I had to come under rabbinic thought and teachings, right? Because that's the only way for me to understand how to apply the scriptures and be taught the proper perspective.
Okay.
Does that answer?
Yeah, I mean, that's your answer. That's good. Anybody else?
Spiritual scholars.
Okay, spiritual scholars. Very good. Okay, any other opinions? Okay, it's interesting about the Pharisees. I got some more thesis, but it's a little bit more provable, okay? Now, when you looked at the Pharisees, and you go to, say, Mark chapter 7, for example, they argue with Yeshua's Talmudim, and they say they didn't wash their hands, or they didn't do a particular thing, okay? Now, I'm not going to go through the entire discussion about washing hands and etc., but most of you have been taught about washing hands and the significance of washing hands. But where does the washing of hands come into play? Where do we see the washing of hands? Where is the washing of hands significant as we look into the biblical material? Where is the washing of hands significant?
The morning ritual.
Okay, you're talking about the morning ritual where?
When you first get out, you wash your hands.
Okay, so you're talking about now what we do, the practice that we follow now. I'm talking about biblically. Can you find the washing of hands? Can you find the understanding for all of this in the biblical text itself? Where's the root of the practice that we practice in the morning where we get up and we say Netzliat Yadayim? Where's the root of that practice?
That's not necessarily the most correct way to put it, but it's not in the scriptures. It is.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Are you sure?
I've never found it when I studied.
Are you sure?
I didn't find it when I studied.
Now, listen to the question. Where is the root for what we do? I didn't say where did the... Huh?
In the Torah.
It has to be the root for it. Somewhere has to be in the Torah, right? And it has to be something that's transpiring in the Torah that later on people, like for example the Pharisees, the Perushim, they implemented in their life. So it has to have a Torah basis. Does it have a Torah basis?
I'm sure the root's there, but the root. Implicit...
Okay, now that's not my question. We'll talk about that later, but my question is, where is the root? See, because before you understand why we do it, you need to go to the material, the root, the core of it, to find out where it comes from, and then say, well, if this is the root for it, then it has to come from the idea, the ideology from behind has to come from here.
Leviticus?
Okay, Leviticus without any question, but now who in Leviticus? What in Leviticus?
Ah,
very good. Okay, so every morning the Kohanim were supposed to do what? Before they start their service or the service in the morning, they had to do what? Wash hands and wash their feet. Okay, so this practice came into the daily practice of the Perushim, the Pharisees, and the Pharisees implemented it into their daily routine. Why? Why? If the basis for it is in the priest going to the temple, how do you make the connection between the priest going to the temple and the Pharisee coming up with the idea that you and I need to wash our hands as we prepare for the day?
Because we're supposed to minister to the Lord.
Okay, minister to the Lord, okay?
You have to be clean, sanctified and clean before you can do that.
Okay, very good. Now, let me... Go ahead.
I always thought it was just the
physical representation of the spiritual principle where you were setting yourself aside, pretty much the same thing, for service.
Okay, there's no problem with that. That's absolutely correct. But what we're saying is, how did they take and make this that the priest is doing, the Kohanim, all of the Kohanim as they're serving in the temple, down to where that they as individuals or we as individuals are doing it. How do they make this connection? And can I say one other thing? We have to qualify it, right? Chapter and verse, please. Right? Listen. You know what? The difficulty with us is that many times we don't want to delve into it, and many times we're just lazy enough that we just, okay, somebody said do it, so we do it, right? Rather than try to find out, you know, the whole process behind why we do a particular thing or why we follow a particular instance or case or practice or whatever, okay? Now, let me give you a little hint. Doesn't God say that the people of Israel, the nation of Israel, would be a kingdom of
priests,
okay? So what do you think the Pharisees thought they were?
Priests,
okay? And it's very, very interesting, and here's my thesis. The idea is that they don't care about the priest being a priest after the same manner as the priesthood of Aaron. Okay, what do they want? What kind of a priesthood do they want to emulate? Huh? If they don't want to emulate the priesthood of Aaron, what kind of priesthood do they want? Yeah, exactly. Melchizedek. Okay? Why Melchizedek? Why Melchizedek? Why does it have to go back to Melchizedek? By the way, of course, you well know that this is the priesthood that Yeshua wants to return to, right? So, as a Pharisee, you start seeing that, well, he did, and obviously you should make the connection that they did. Okay? So why would Yeshua want to go back to the priesthood of Melchizedek? Okay, we know Melchizedek, that he was the one who Abraham comes to literally in Jerusalem, right? He comes to him and he gives him his tithe. He gives him tenth of all that he took in the spoils of the battle, right? So there was a priesthood of Melchizedek. Eventually that priesthood ended and the priesthood of Aaron came about. And then Yeshua does what? He says, we want to go back to, or I'm going to be a priest after the order of Melchizedek. Okay, so what is the idea of that particular priesthood? Why do you want to go back to that priesthood?
Is it about righteousness?
Okay, you can say those things, righteousness and that it's fulfilling prophecy, but let's throw those two out. Very good. The first what?
The first priesthood.
Oh, it was the first priesthood? Okay, you...
The first order.
Okay, you're... It's right on the tip of your lips. You have an answer?
I know, but I'm waiting to say that about everybody else first, and I'll be.
Okay, anybody else have an answer? Okay, Dr. Elisheva.
It's the service of the firstborn.
It's the firstborn. Okay? The firstborn, the priesthood of the firstborn. The firstborn and the eldest of the family was always the priest of the family in antiquity. And eventually it came and it was handed down to Aaron. And now what needs to happen is we need to turn around and go back to that same order. And that's what the Pharisee, whether he had that specifically in his mind or not, that's what's going on. They're returning because they saw themselves the priest. The husband is the priest of his family. Where is his altar?
It's home. It's home. I mean, it's a table.
His table, literally. Right? Where's his sacrifices?
The food that's prepared for the table.
Okay, the food that's prepared. Okay, but we have... When you had the sacrifices in the temple, there was one key ingredient. You should have learned this last week. Okay, one key ingredient. What was that? Well, there's two key ingredients. Okay,
fire.
Absolutely, absolutely fire. And what was the other? Salt. Very good. Okay? So you'd have fire and salt. So at our table we have... We don't carry fire in here anymore, right? Okay, so yeah, on Sabbath we have fire for the candles. Very good. And we have what for our bread?
Salt.
Okay? So there's our sacrifices. You see what I'm saying? We see the picture of our sacrifices right there. They're representative, absolutely, but nonetheless, that's now our altar. That's, you know, our sacrifice, etc.
But I got a question.